I'm not showing anything, I'm just starting a recording. Okay, so yeah, let's revisit the goals of your work. Like, what are the goals in your view, and let's make sure that they are aligned with what I'm thinking as well. Okay, so what are the goals in your opinion?
Okay, goals are
the goals have to meet three requirements. But what are the goals before we decide whether they meet the requirements or not?
Well, for the project entirely, it's persistence. Getting persistence. I want to say not too much overhead, in that the program should be a lot intersecting rights, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So, rights, and I'd say that.
But the okay, persistence is a goal. Intercepting rights is just a means to achieve that goal.
Okay.
Right. Because what we are trying to do is to extract or capture a snapshot of process memory, right? And have the process memory state move from a point in time to the next consistent point in time, from one consistent point in time to the next consistent point in time. And what is a consistent point in time is defined by the application. So the application knows when all of memory state is in a consistent state or not. Is it in a state which the application can start from or restart its execution from? Between these two consistent states, there are many inconsistent states. Right? So what's an example of an inconsistent state?
Say you're trying to do matrix multiplication, and depending on how you've defined what a consistent state is, perhaps, say, when one column for one number, when you have multiplied fully one column with the row of another matrix, that could be a consistent state once you achieve one memory. So in between, when you're halfway, that would be an inconsistent state.
Right.
You've only multiplied half the column with half the row.
Yeah. Right. Or a simpler example would be when you're adding a node to a linked list, you have some pointers that have not been set yet. Because when you add a new element to a linked list, you need to set up a few pointers so that the linked list is formed well. So, and there are several pointers to be set up. And you set a few pointers, you unset the rest. So you have an inconsistent linked list. Once you add the linked list, and, you know, all the pointers are set up, then you have a consistent linked list. That could be a consistent state from the process's standpoint, right? So there are many inconsistent states. What we need to ensure is that the process, when it defines a consistent state, let's call it a consistency point in time, we make that consistent state persistent. Because there is a persistent state of the process memory as well. Right? Because the project that you are working on captures a process state persistently, but it doesn't do it continuously. It does it from one consistent point in time to the next consistent point in time. When a process reaches the next consistent point in time, the software that you're building, the infrastructure, will capture the next persistent state because it got to the next consistency point.
So, okay, that is probably
so. That's a high-level goal.
Then you want this consistency state to be programmer defined.
Yes. So okay. The programmer will say, okay, make things persistent to now because I'm in a consistent state.
Okay. Because I was thinking of really any change to memory, you just want to have that recorded in a way so everything could be backed up again once the program is restarted. Which I was thinking in a way where try to do it in a way where the programmer doesn't even need to define or go into change the source code or do anything, just kind of run the program through this other persistency program and
capture all modifications to memory.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is a different goal. It's not clear how that notion of persistence can be used. It is not clear, to me at least, how that notion of persistence can be used. Because what you're saying is that every modification becomes persistent, right? Every change becomes persistent. It's not clear to me how that really fine-grained notion of persistence can be used by application. Because in the end, if you create a library of some sort that provides you, a persistent address space, there also has to be a way to utilize those persistent states from an application developer standpoint. Otherwise,
I think I see. Okay.
So the developer, if he defines the states which are consistent, the developer can also define recovery mechanisms that can restart execution from those consistent states. So you can imagine, for instance, the process has some state variable in memory that tells the application that's executing, keeps track of the state of the application. Let's consider a matrix multiplication application. The created cell 1,1, created cell 1,2, created cell 1,3, that's my state. Now let's say I crash at some point, and like you said, intermediate states of the multiplication are not captured. If they're not captured, that state which says, well, I'm done with 13,17, right? The process, by looking at that, can know where to start from. And it has, whatever computation it has done so far is all consistent, because after it did 13,17, said, okay, I'm done with that. Take a snapshot right now. But in the intermediary steps where I was creating the value of 13,17, I did not take any consistency points. But on the other hand, if you were to capture all those intermediate states and recover to some arbitrary state, which the process has no idea what it was doing, then it's a lot more difficult for the process to restart execution, to continue where it left off.
Then,
so that is the goal, and I'm glad we're talking about it, because we need to make sure that we are both on the same page, at least with respect to the goals of the project. Okay, so the goal of the project then is, in your own words.
Now I'm viewing it more as, to use your own word, a snapshot, just kind of almost like a virtual machine does.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Of process memory state, as and initiated by the process itself.
Then, how is this different from your own software persistent?
Okay. In the software persistent memory, the application needs to set up containers. It's not, the software persistent memory does not snapshot the entire process address space.
Okay.
It just snapshots a subset of the heap memory. We are talking about snapshotting the entire state of of the process address space, which may or may not be more useful than the software persistent memory. They may be equally useful. The target platform for this specific project, in my mind at least, is non-volatile memory. So when your memory itself is non-volatile, when you're running your process in non-volatile memory, what happens then is that the process, even if you have, let's say, a crash or a power failure, the process state, memory state is preserved as is. All the contents are there in memory. You don't have to explicitly write anything out to save it. But then that's also a problem. Because if the state of the process preserved as is, every modification, every write is also preserved. Because all these are writes to persistent memory. But it's a problem because the process doesn't know how to reuse all that state, all the intermediary states. Which is why we go about creating this new infrastructure, which is in some sense a regression of the state, because we move the state back to a previous point in time, as opposed to the current point in time. So you're regressing time, but only because it's a more consistent point. And the process knows how to recover starting from that point.
And okay, because certain information like register information isn't
the process register state is a different beast altogether. And there are two ways to look at this. One is that we capture register state as well. Okay, during the consistency point. And that might actually be okay. So when you have a consistency point, you capture not just the process memory, but also register state. But that's a little bit more expensive operation. If you capture register state, then you can restore execution completely to that consistent state. Then you may ask, well, if I can restore execution, why not restore to some arbitrary point? Why not make every write, you know, track every write? It's too expensive to capture register state on every write operation. Because every write would then lead to a whole bunch of writes to also capture register state. Because register state is not persistent. It's all volatile registers. So you have to write it to persistent memory before you can capture it. But if your persistent states, your consistent states do not occur too frequently, it will spread out, then at a consistency point, you may be able to save register state as well. And then, because at that point, your register state is at the same point in time as your memory state, you can restart execution right away without any problem. That's one model where you are restoring not just the process memory state but also CPU state. So from a process standpoint, there was no crash. It doesn't have to have any explicit recovery method. There are some caveats here though. Process state can include operating system state. Like if it had opened some files or opened file descriptors lying around. And since the operating system went away as well, all those file descriptors from an operating system state standpoint do not exist. So you see where that problem lies, right? Does that make sense? So let's say you open a file, you get a file descriptor back. That file descriptor now becomes part of the process state because sitting somewhere in the heap or stack, right? And the process is executing using that file descriptor. It crashed, the OS crashed as well. It was a power failure. restarted the OS. The file descriptor doesn't mean anything to the OS anymore. It's a completely new state of the OS. For the process, if you restore the state from exactly the point in time that it crashed, including CPU state, all of that information, the process didn't see the crash. It doesn't experience the power failure. It continues using those file descriptors, which the operating system has no clue about.
So you're saying if the persistency state was taken before the file descriptor was given,
then it may be okay. So all I'm saying is that there are operating system state on which the process state may be dependent on, okay, which then becomes problematic. If you want to capture both memory state and CPU state, you want to just have the process start right away without thinking that it crashed, without realizing. There is a little bit of a problem with that model with respect to state dependency with the OS, right? On the other hand, if the processor were to write its own recovery code, then all we are providing is a memory state snapshot. And process, by looking at some part of its memory state, maybe some execution state variable that it creates and keeps populating, and it goes through different phases of its execution, looks at it and says, okay, it seems like in the previous execution before I crashed and now I'm running recovery code, I was at this point. Well, if I had to keep going, I have to reinitialize all my file descriptors and network connections and so on. So let me, as part of my recovery code, do that, and then I can continue my execution from the point in time that I was.
Okay. So perhaps if it knows it's a file descriptor, it can just handle it.
Process knows it, you know, which file descriptor it's using, because it was the one, the developer, the application writer was the one who created the code to initialize file descriptors, network sockets, everything, right? So the application developer better know what OS resources it would need to keep going. So then the recovery code would initialize all of those resources on which its own execution is dependent upon, reinitialize them, and then it can continue execution. So persistent memory in that sense is very interesting. If you have just persistent memory, no volatile memory at all your processes can, you know, they don't need to restart from the beginning. They can all keep going from wherever they were.
So, say I've implemented something.
Mm-hmm.
How do I test it as if it was non-volatile memory?
One thing you can do is you can kill the process, but that would not which you can do is send a signal to the process. The process signal handler, write a signal handler for the process that does the recovery.
Okay.
So.
Oh. Yeah. So simulate as if it was killed, but just takes some time.
Yeah, you could do that, but I don't know if that's the best way or not. So you write a signal handler for the process. The process gets a signal, runs the handler. The handler, the first thing it needs to do is to stop the primary thread that's executing. The process running, right? Process running instruction.
Why not just like pause it? Oh, okay, just stop, like pause it.
Pause it somehow.
Okay, yeah.
Somehow suspend the thread.
It could return from that pause.
One thing that you could do is have a global state that you keep checking within your code to say, okay, do I need to stop or not? And then the handler sets that variable, it stop now.
Okay.
And run recovery code or something like that. You could do it that way. It's one way, but that is, seems a little bit roundabout. There must be an easier way here. Anyway, you know, that's something for you to think about.
Okay. Yeah. But I'm glad you mentioned the non-volatile memory, because I was beginning to think back on the presentation.
Yeah.
And
yeah, those guys were doing slightly different things, and I was a little surprised myself with the way they did things. But yeah, so now you have a better idea.
Okay.
So now let's go back to the discussion of what is it that you would need to do to make this persistent state or store this persistent state. Thing is that persistent state, since everything is NVRAM, everything is persistent. That persistent state is changing all the time. And you don't want all those changes to be reflected as part of the persistent state.
I was thinking maybe from the sound of it, create my own data structure. I had a library, and then what the programmer could do is, or the developer, he can go in and, okay, like say for the matrix multiplication, this is when he defines the array that his final matrix is going to be held in. He can go in and change the data structure of that from int array to maybe new int array. And that anything that is a new int array will be simulated as if it was put in non-volatile memory.
Well, what I want you to think about is that the entire process is running in non-volatile memory. Everything is non-volatile memory, including the stack, heap, code, data. Everything is non-volatile memory.
So, but that's what is. Any changes to that area would induce a snapshot.
No, the developer, the application itself will request a snapshot.
Okay.
So you think of the snapshot invocation as being done by the application. Just like it happens in software persistent memory. You read that, right?
So like a method.
Method just invoked. Then you know when that it is time to take the snapshot.
Okay, so those terms, what would be needed? I guess just a running list of. I want to say all the changes, but there'd have to be. I'd have to find a way to define what changes would the snapshot include, and when the snapshot would be taken.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'd probably go back to what I originally said for the first question. Would be introduce a sort of new data structure that would tell you what changes would the snapshot include. And then a method for when the snapshot would be taken.
Yeah. Well, let me throw out something for you, if you want, okay? All the state is in persistent memory already. Process is running in persistent memory, okay? So the only thing that you need to keep track of is how do you reverse the updates that have been made since the last consistent version of this of the process memory. So you have a consistent version of process memory, you can think of as doing nothing, because that at that point in time the process memory is in a consistent state. But beyond that point, the process continues to make changes to its states. That's the problematic part. So, let's say that I have a consistent state of process memory, and I write protect all of this. Process makes a change because write protected, or because actually, let's forget about write protection. It's because you're doing write interposition. Every write is captured by your dynamic translator, right? So the write goes through your mechanism. What you can do is record the previous version of what is being written, because that's a consistent version. Let's recall that the previous state was consistent. Whatever is being changed is the consistent version of that. You record it somewhere else in your scratch pad, and then you allow the write to go through.
Okay.
The process can continue executing. The first write to every location is what needs to trigger storing the previous version, because that would be the consistent version. As next time, if the process writes, let's say it writes multiple times to the same location, you don't care about that. You only care about the first write, because that was the write which overwrote the consistent version, and that forced you to store that consistent version somewhere else. So then what you have in your scratch pad is a bunch of updates to memory locations and the consistent data that was contained in those memory locations. Now, when there is a restore operation, all you need to do, you already have a persistent state here. The thing is that it also contains some updates that are inconsistent. What you need to do is to restore, look at your scratch pad, and revert all those changes.
Okay. But what about, since this is not volatile memory, what about other memory locations that have been updated, but we don't really care about them?
We care about the entire address space.
Okay. So, every update. Okay.
The portions, the different sections of the address space are code, data, right? Data is a global data, right? Heap is the dynamically allocated memory, and stack, which are all the dynamically created stack frames when functions get called, right? The stack is probably not important to store persistently, but the rest, all of it probably is, and maybe not even the code, because the code can be loaded. But let's say that you're talking about the entire address space being persistent. The code segment probably will not get modified. The heap and data will get modified. The stack will be continuously modified. So one thing which we can do, for instance, if the stack is being modified, we could, so a version of your library can be configured to exclude stack. The stack is in a fixed range of memory addresses. You can do that.
Okay.
But in the first version, to keep things extremely simple, we treat all memory as important. Not have any exclusions, because those are special cases that need to be handled differently. Adds complexity.
Makes sense. Okay. And if that program forks, and
that's a new process. A new process gets created.
You'd also have to, I guess, label processes as part of snapshot, not part of snapshot.
It wouldn't be, because it's a different process.
Okay.
It wouldn't be part of the same address space. It's a new address space.
I see. But it's still part of that of the group, or?
I would say don't worry about it right now. I mean, we need to take baby steps. But the forking of a process and semantics and creation of multiple threads and multiple stacks and all that is it's something that should be considered much later. Because if we start off by considering all the possibilities, then the problem becomes too complex for you to come up with a simple solution. Once you have a simple solution, the simplest possible solution, then we can expand the scope of that solution to address these cases. But if we start with a complex problem, then you might come up with a solution that is, what should I say, it's an overkill, because you consider too many possibilities at once. So if you think of a smaller problem, you may come up with a simpler solution.
Okay.
So based on what I told you, think about what it would mean. Does that sound something feasible? How would you create a solution? I want you to think about those questions. Because what I put out there is just an idea.
Okay.
Now it's for you to think about, well, how to make this idea, is it possible to create a system that implements the idea?
Okay.
You need a design of some kind. You need to lay out a little bit of an algorithm to say what happens on a write, what do I need to do? Do I have the software capability to do what needs to be done? So that's the next question. Once you have an approach, I put an approach out there. What you need to do is convert that idea or approach into an actual design with an algorithm and things like that. Once you have that, then you look into feasibility aspects. Can I create software that implements the algorithm? Do I have enough support? Can I use binary translation? Do I need something else? That sort of stuff.
That kind of makes the way I've been going at it. Better. I think I've been just, since I've been rushing steps, jumping steps.
Well, that's fine. I mean, it was largely on purpose that I did not want to clearly define the problem for you or propose a solution, because I wanted you to think about the possibilities and you had some interesting ideas. So I'm putting out an idea now and see what you can do with it.
Okay.
Right. So now it's time to get down a little bit more to the, get more detail oriented. And maybe it's a dead end, but at least you have something to think about.
Okay. And on a side note, I wanted to ask you about the email you sent out for the conference.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if it would be out of place for me to try and sign up for that.
Not at all.
No? Okay. Because I already got my student status verified by that website.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I just need to...
Well, I sent you an email. I sent you that email. I won't send it to you if I... If I didn't intend, it was for you as well.
Well, granted, it was like for the Scilab.
Yeah.
I was part of the mailing list, but okay, I just wanted to make sure. I was going to try for that. And,
I think it'll be a great experience. It can be somewhat overwhelming because you just started research, but sometimes it's good to do it really early as well, because then your brain is not biased with all the nonsense that I'm giving you. It's more open.
Okay.
I'm not giving you nonsense, but I'm saying that I have a way of thinking which is already well established. I'm too old, it doesn't change very easily. But for you, that's not the case. So before you get sort of slotted into a certain way of thinking, being influenced by me, I think it's important for you to get a more broader outlook, which you will most certainly get at the conference.
It would be nice.
Yeah.
I'd like to go. Well, I do believe my deadline is on Monday.
Oh, this application deadline?
Yes. I believe it's either this Monday or the Monday after next. But regardless, I should probably get that paragraph done. The date... Sorry, one more question. For when you send in the little...
Mm-hmm.
The write-up that you have to, yes, the statement, is it a page-long thing? Is it terribly lengthy?
No. Shouldn't be more than a page.
Okay.
They're just looking for what your interests are, what you're working on, why you think the conference will benefit you, attending the conference will benefit you. And the reasons are very easy, right? Because we'll get to know the latest research that is going on in your field of work. Make sure that you write that you're an undergraduate student, because they have a soft corner for undergraduate students.
Okay.
And the other thing is networking, that you'll get to see the people and talk to the people whose papers you're reading about. Get first-hand, you know, feedback from them on your work. It's very important. So that those are the kinds of things that you want to put in your statement.
Okay. I almost wish I had a paper to send in, but let's see.
Well, a paper takes time. It takes at least a year. And that's after we've identified a direction. In your case, we're still working on something. We're still working, you know, identifying a direction. Once we have that, then it'll take another year before we can get a paper out.
Well, sounds good.
Okay.
Let's see. Thank you, Dr. Raji.
All right. You take care. If you're going to the lab, can you do me a favor?
Sure.
Can you take all of these magazines there for you guys to read? It's just that I've been accumulating them. I usually, you know, forward it to the lab sooner, but too busy.
Yeah, you should see my desk. Just...
All right. See you, Daniel.